It's a case of organic versus organic. To make big organic happy, the USDA issued a rule change allowing compost containing pesticide residues to be used in organic farming. To make small organic happy, a federal judge tossed the USDA rule change out the door. And so today we pause to ask, should compost containing pesticide residues be allowed in organic farming?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1069th edition of the Food Chain right here on the GCN Radio Network. Hey, perhaps you're among our friends way over there in Monte Carlo who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio with engineer Jason Struby. Hello, Jason.
Greetings.
Question, Jason, do you eat organic food?
I do. I try to whenever I can.
Whenever you can. Well, let me ask you this. Should compost containing pesticide residues be allowed if it will make your organic foods cheaper?
Doesn't sound healthier.
Well, but it's cheaper.
I'll have to get back to you on that.
Okay. Well, listen and learn, then.
I will.
Okay. Folks, once while visiting the Shipibo Indians along the headwaters of the Amazon, I watched as a leaf that had fallen to the rainforest floor was consumed by an army of decomposers. Through the enzymes resident in their digestive tracts, those decomposers rendered that leaf into essential nutrients, which, in my mind's eye at least, were immediately carried back up into the forest canopy. Truth is, death does not last long in the Amazon. Up here in the temperate zone, death lasts a little bit longer. Still, nature is hungry for the nutrients and decomposition happens. Fact is, decomposition is a big reason we humans have been able to live in one location for long periods of time. Like Mother Nature herself, we recycle dead things, usually plant matter, into living soil. We call the trick composting. In modern times, composting is the trick to what we call organic farming, which is really what we've been doing all along. However, organic farming now has lots of rules and regulations to distinguish it from what some call industrial farming. One of the biggest rules of organic farming is no pesticides. Imagine the ruckus then when the USDA issued rules allowing compost containing pesticide residues to be used in the commercial organic farming, and another ruckus when a federal judge tossed the rule out. And so today we pause to ask, should compost containing pesticide residues be allowed in organic farming? And hey, we have a great guest to ask that. He is Stan Mitchell, the proprietor of Pacific Coast Ag. Stan, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you, Michael.
And you brought a guest. Who's the guest?
My son, Diego.
Well, good morning, Diego. Welcome aboard.
Thank you.
Good. And I was asking you earlier what you like to study in school.
Science.
Science? Got to move right up on that microphone, like that. What do you like?
Science.
Science. Good. We're going to do a little science today, okay?
Fine.
With your papa. Great. Well, Pacific Coast Ag. What is Pacific Coast Ag, Stan?
We are a service-oriented company that distributes various compost materials, soil amendments, gypsum, limestone, compost products, primarily most of it organic. However, we do quite a bit with commercial as well.
Good. So you work with both sides of the size spectrum. You work with big farmers, you work with small farmers.
Yeah, that is correct.
You're Mr. In-Between on this, aren't you?
I am, certainly.
Okay. Well, you've had some wherewithal to kind of really have an insight into what's going on with this pesticide or with this compost ruling and the consequent judge's decision to throw the ruling out. And you were involved in a conversation put on by the Organic Trade Association in which you brought all kinds of people together to figure out what to do with the situation. So let's kind of go through it and redo a thumbnail about the conflict. First of all, organic versus organic. You've got an industry that's blossoming like crazy, 14% growth per year, something like $40 billion worth of organic food being sold per year.
Something could be. I'm not exactly sure.
Honestly. Something like that. Huge. So here we have an industry that a lot of people want to buy organic food, and agriculture is trying to figure out how best to deliver that food. Those are very big farmers who have lots of acreage, would like to get that compost essentially from green waste programs, right?
Yeah, there's locally, green waste compost is favored for a lot of various reasons, and it's not necessarily because of organic integrity. A lot of it revolves around food safety because of the E. coli situation that happened several years back with the spinach. There's been certain criteria put into place to ensure a safe food stream, and one of those is trying to avoid where possible. Well, not trying to avoid, but just documenting that whether it's a manure-based material or green waste material that has been processed correctly to avoid any pathogen content that can go into the field for food safety reasons.
Sure. And the problem is that pathogens or pesticide residues even got into the green waste program. How did that happen?
Well, most of the green waste is municipal yard waste.
Coming from the cities.
Coming from various cities, that is correct. And so there's a implication that pesticides or herbicides could be in the feedstock.
Mm-hmm. And then, so this was troubling for the industry. So the industry essentially petitioned USDA to change their how they look at this rule, right?
Well, not necessarily. What my understanding of the situation was is growers buy materials in good faith that they have been processed and handled and listed and registered and audited to comply with organic standards. And the organic standards are clear. There are no pesticides allowed.
No pesticides, right.
And so it comes down to the certifiers and the material reviewers to ensure that what they list and allow for organics does not contain pesticides.
Okay, but that was not the case before the USDA issued its ruling, was it?
No, it's always been the case.
Always been the case?
And every certifier has the authority to, on demand, wherever, to pull a sample and have pesticide residue done.
Then what did the USDA ruling do?
Basically, it put an added layer of protection ultimately to the farmer that, for example, they purchased green waste compost or any compost for that matter. It could be manure-based, green waste. It could be a blend of other industry wastes.
Mm-hmm.
They buy that in good faith that they're buying a clean product. However, if there was some contaminant in there that they were not aware of, this NOP 5016 essentially added a layer of protection for them that they would not lose their certification.
The organic farmers would not.
The organic farmers would not lose their certification.
Okay. So it sounds like a good deal. Why did so many nonprofit companies or organizations sue the USDA in federal court and win a judgment that threw that ruling out?
That's pretty simple. The USDA did not follow the procedural processes for creating a rule or law or any legislature, which is the APA, the Administrative Procedures Act, which requires public input and debate, a public comment period prior to creating any law.
Okay. So they just changed the rule without changing the rule. But that by just issuing, telling people how to interpret the rule.
That's exactly right. So
this is how to read this rule.
Exactly. And so the USDA basically stated in court that we didn't change anything. All we tried to do was clarify our position. And, you know, at the end of the day, it was a procedural flaw that got taken to court. And because they did not allow for public input comment period, the law as of Monday is vacated and is no longer on the rule books.
And what does that mean for the industry?
Basically, that means that, well, it doesn't change the way compost has always been evaluated. It doesn't change the fact that pesticides and herbicides are not allowed in organic production. That extra layer of protection for the farmer is taken away, essentially. And the burden of proof is put heavily on the certifying agencies.
And that means some political and economic and financial liabilities that weren't there before.
Could be.
Okay, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with Stan Mitchell, proprietor of Pacific Coast Ag and San Diego. We're talking about compost. We're talking about how the compost industry will go forward, and whether those materials that should not be in organic agriculture are allowed to be. Right back.
Wow, MetroFarm.com says we can earn a 5-, 6-, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city.
And we don't even have to own the land. We can lease it year to year.
MetroFarm.com says we can grow fruit on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, vegetables in city greenbelts, and ornamentals in neighborhoods of fancy homes.
We can even grow flowers on our wooded hillside.
Get all the information you need to grow for profit at MetroFarm.com, including the complete guide to earning 5-, 6-, and 7-figure incomes by farming small parcels of land. Meet the farmers who earn the money. Find experts at MetroFarm.com who will examine your property and assess which crops to grow. Meet consultants who will help steer your project to profitability. And get the latest news about the business of growing high-value specialty crops for the city at MetroFarm.com.
We've always dreamed about farming a small parcel of land. At MetroFarm.com, we can get all the help we need to stop dreaming and start growing.
Welcome back, folks. Michael Olson here, Food Chain Radio Program. We're talking about composting. You know, it's a probably, we were just talking off the air with Stan Mitchell and talking about the whole notion of composting. And it's really what we've been doing forever, but we just probably invented the term composting. How long have we been, you know, refocusing on composting? Stan, I was raised on a farm where that's what we did. You know, we took all of the animal waste and all of the plant waste and we mixed them together and composted it. We put it in a big manure spreader and we, you know, put it on top of the land, and that's how we grew crops back then. But Grandpa never called it composting. So how long have we been composting?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not exactly sure when the term composting came into play. I've been in the business for 16, 17 years now. My father was in the business before me. And, you know, I think composting itself is identified through a very stringent process of basically breaking down plant and animal material. Mm-hmm. Now, you could, and possibly historically, it's been called compost when technically it was not what we call compost today, which goes through various stages of biological breakdown and pathogen reduction and temperature control and all the above.
Tell us how to make compost today. Because what you describe seems to be like a very deliberate technological process, where Grandpa was just throwing stuff in a pile and turning it once in a while.
Right. And I think back then, you know, maybe the technical composting part of it might have actually been a mode of action that happened in the soil, not necessarily on top of ground prior to the application. In a nutshell, composting, as we know it today, is taking, like I said, plant or animal waste, creating a aerobic environment in a...
Wait a minute. Diego, do you know what aerobic means?
No.
Okay, with air.
With air. Yes, there you go. So they put various materials. For instance, what we're talking about now is green waste. They create a windrow, which is basically a long pile, and you start with various carbon nitrogen ratios.
Oh, what is the ratio, the proper ratio, carbon and nitrogen? That seems to be the magic.
It's anywhere from, as I understand, 30 to 1 carbon nitrogen ratio up to 40 to 50 to 1 carbon nitrogen ratio.
So what you want is
green oil sand itself is a very high carbon content material.
Which means it's fibrous.
That is correct, yeah. And so you've got tree trimmings, grass trimmings, bush trimmings, all the above that
so you want a lot of fibrous stuff, you know, like shrubbery and wood chips and stuff, for a little bit of nitrogen, which is like...
That is correct.
Animal waste or something.
Sure, sure. Now, in this case, what we're talking about is green waste compost, so... You know, you want a wide spectrum of feedstocks, whether it's tree trimmings, grass trimmings, all the above, because the more woody the fiber, the harder it is to break down.
Right, right.
And so the material gets ground. The material comes into the facilities. It gets ground as small as possible, gets put into a windrow, moisture's added. Oxygen is prevalent because of the particle size. You've got air gaps throughout the pile. And basically what happens is Mother Nature takes over.
Mm-hmm.
There's
the bugs,
millions and millions of little microbes in there that's decomposing the plant matter. And in turn, it's creating temperatures. Mm-hmm. Temperatures spike up. And you are constantly turning this pile to put oxygen back in there for the microbes to continue to do their job. And what you have at the end of the day is a product that reached high temperatures for a specific amount of time that killed weed seeds, killed pathogens.
It's nature's pasteurizer, right?
Yeah. Most of the time, any contaminants that might have been in there as well have effectively been reduced. And at the end of the process, you're left with a very stable organic matter that gets applied back to the soil as a vital part of the soil chemistry.
Diego, have you ever smelled good compost? Ever taken a handful and smelled it?
No.
Oh, try it sometime.
Depends on what you call good compost.
Well, good healthy compost.
It's
been composted.
There you go.
That's been composted. You don't want to start when it's the beginning. You want to smell it at the end.
At the end. Very earthy.
Yes, very earthy. It's just almost, it's almost like breathing fresh air of the earth, almost. It's such a wonderful smell. So then in that, what does that compost do when you put it into the soil?
Compost does a lot. It adds organic matter. It adds a stable carbon source that the soil microbes feed off of. You know, the soil in itself is a living body, and you don't realize that at a lot of levels. I've in my short career so far, I've learned so much along the way, and soil health is extremely important for basically creating its own checks and balances. Modern day farming, we are up against so many challenges with various soil diseases. And
why is that? I can recall nothing of the sort of the kinds of pathogens that we're faced with on the grandparents' farm. I was not very old, but I don't ever recall. His big problem was like hailstorms.
Okay.
That was a big problem, but the soil always seemed, the plants always seemed to be healthy, and that was never a problem. So why are we faced with all of these problems these days?
You know, that's a good question. And I mean, my interpretation is, and I could be wrong, there is such a demand for organic produce, conventional produce, that
we were hungry people, and there's lots of
we've got to feed a world, we've got to feed a nation, and soils get tired. Land is extremely expensive to lease or own, and you can't afford just to let that piece of ground sit. You know, historically there was heavy cover crop rotations. You would farm a piece, you would let it set fallow for a certain amount of time, maybe it's a season. You would grow a cover crop on it that would basically reinvigorate the soil, much like composting. Mm-hmm. And growers are not in a position. It's too costly to do that.
If you're renting land, you need to farm your acreage. If you're renting land for, I don't know what they rent it for these days, but especially around the salad bowl of the world, it's very expensive.
It's several thousand dollars an acre.
Yeah. So you can't afford to let it sit.
You can't afford to let it sit. And so inadvertently.
Compost then is one way to reinvigorate the soil.
Absolutely.
And keep it up and going.
That is correct.
So then it's hugely important. The other thing about compost is that it's glue. Humus. It produces that humus, and humus is essentially the glue that kind of holds soil particles together. And then in that holding together, the soil can hold nutrients and moisture.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the only thing that in the soil that allows for holding nutrients is like that is clay. So hugely important in many respects, not just for providing more nutrients, but for providing consistency and texture and everything else too.
Yeah, beneficial microbes, fresh sources of carbon that indigenous microbes feed off of.
What about the other agriculture, the conventional agriculture that does not use organic materials? How do they hold their soil together?
Well, actually, there is a tremendous amount of compost going into conventional farming.
Oh, okay. So yes. Both parties have a concern here with respect to compost then.
Absolutely.
Okay, folks, Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio Program. We're talking with Stan Mitchell, proprietor of Pacific Ag Gas, and Diego, too, who is the progeny coming up, the young Pacific Coast Ag. And we're talking about composting and whether, what do you think? Do you think compost should be allowed to contain pesticide residues? Well, that's on the table today, 831-479-1080. Well, folks, we are talking about the business of decomposition. And essentially, we're talking composting, which is kind of a relatively new word we cooked up maybe in the last 100 years or so to describe what we've always done as human beings to be able to live in one place for a long period of time. When we keep planting our crops in one place over a long period of time, we just kind of take all of the minerals and vitamins and nutrients out of that soil, and we put them into the crops, and we harvest the crops, and we eat the crops. But if we don't put the minerals, the essential nutrients back into the soil, the nitrogen, the phosphorus, the potassium, all of the secondary and trace elements, then those soils become deficient. And the plants that grow from that soil become deficient in essential nutrients. And when we eat those plants, we become deficient in essential nutrients. And then we can't stay on that land anymore, and we have to move on to someplace else that still has those nutrients in the soil. And so today we're looking at one of the processes by which we re-enrich the soil, and that's through composting. We take waste and we compost it, which is the technological expression for a controlled decomposition of that material from plant and animal matter back into soil, essentially. Is that a fair expression, Dan?
Yeah. Yeah, I would agree.
And so without those recycling of vital nutrients, and we simply can't hang around for one place very much longer, unless of course we go to a world of total synthetic nutrition, in which the soil becomes kind of a inert substance, and then we feed the plants directly with those elements, those nutrients that we think they need to get along in the world. And so those are the two different kinds of agriculture that we're working with. Well, today we're talking specifically about organic agriculture and how it's become a $40 billion a year business in the United States, growing by 14% per year. And yet 82% of the consumers in the United States do not yet buy organic ag food. So what that points to is that there's a huge, huge industry potential of growth here for organic agriculture. Stan Mitchell, how are we going to make that agriculture work? How are we going to feed all of those people who have yet to even taste organic food?
That's an enormous challenge. You know, as the industry grows, specifically in organics, you know, so must the allowable products that come into play to help grow these crops. This is not easily done, and it takes the right inputs, the right quantities, and it's tough. Every organic farmer out there has a hard time. You know, you're working against Mother Nature that has been historically depleted, and it's on them to put it all back to get their crops.
Yeah. So governing this world of organic agriculture is a national organic program.
That is correct.
And that's a function of the United States Department of Agriculture.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And what you said kind of rings true, because as industry, as farming, as organic farming, tries to come to grips with this blossoming industry, gosh, how are we going to do it? Well, we look at the National Organic Program, and we see that maybe it's a bit too restrictive, right?
Well, I can't say it's a bit too restrictive. I think that they're trying to preserve the integrity of maintaining organic, and it's not easy.
Mm-hmm. Diego, do you understand what do your friends in school talk about organic food at all?
No, not very much.
Not very much?
No.
Okay, fair enough. Do you know that just by putting a label organic on food, people want to spend more money for it because they think it's has benefits that other food does not, and one of the biggest benefits it has is that it doesn't have pesticides in it.
Yeah.
Right? So, and many other things as well. And yet, to satisfy that demand, that huge demand, $40 billion a year in demand, agriculture trying to come to grips with this, well, that brings into focus then what you can do and what you can't do. And as I understand it, some of the industry groups, including, I think, Western Growers and the Organic Trade Association and others, went to the USDA and petitioned them to change a rule that it would make it easier for the industry to operate, organic farming to operate. And according to this note, before the USDA's quiet rule change, the federal organic standard prohibited the use of any compost containing any substance not allowed in organic farming, which included synthetic pesticides and fertilizers. This rule had never been challenged by the composting and waste management industry until California organic regulators banned several composts from organic use after finding them to be contaminated with pesticides. And the National Organic Program supported this action. But the industrial waste or the municipal waste industry fought back and asked the USDA to change the rule. And so the USDA did that by issuing a guidance. So it seems to be the case that the municipal waste people had a problem with the California regulators. Is that what happened then?
You know, I've learned about that situation just here recently in the past few weeks that I've gotten involved. And I don't have a clear picture on exactly what happened, other than the fact that there was bifenthrin, which is a insecticide that
right.
you can homeowners can buy down at Orchard Supply or Home Depot that was detected in, I believe it was detected in a organic crop, and they were able to trace it back to the grower, who in turn was able to trace it back to a compost facility. And that created a complaint. The California Department of Food and Ag did their job and went out and did the investigation and took away their organic listing status. As I understand it, that's what happened.
And in doing so, you know, kind of put a shock to the industry, to the municipal waste industry as well. If you think about it, folks, what do we city people do? You know, we have weeds, we spray some herbicide on it, we have bugs, we spray pesticide, and we're not thinking too much about what happens with the waste that we trim off of our land and we put into the waste system. The waste system takes all that green waste out to the dump and starts composting it or sells it to somebody else who does compost it. And then our pesticides and our herbicides find their way into that green waste program and from that into the organic food system and from that into our organic food. And so that which we are wanting to buy, organic food, may have pesticides in it. And so how do we come to grips with that? What do you think? 831-479-1080. Well, we have a situation, organic versus organic, and the folks that manage big, huge parcels of land petitioned the USDA, the Western Growers Association, and so on, petitioned the USDA to change their ruling on composting, and so the USDA issued a guidance on how to reinterpret their rule. And those who represent smaller agriculture, local agriculture, local organic agriculture say, well, wait a minute, this is changing the basic nature of organic agriculture. So they sued in federal court and the federal judge threw out USDA's ruling. Now, Western Growers, I understand, is considering an appeal. So let's ask why these two parties don't like this ruling. Let's start with why did the small organic people sue in federal court against this USDA ruling change? Stan?
Well, for the obvious reason that the APA was violated. That's the bottom line. That's what brought the lawsuit up in the first place. You cannot create a guidance without allowing for public input and a comment period.
But if they would have liked the ruling change, they probably wouldn't have sued. So there must have been something in the rule that encouraged them to sue.
Yeah, and that's the implication that pesticides are being allowed. And the fact is that pesticides and synthetics is not allowable in organic production. However, there's something that I learned in the past several weeks in dealing with this situation, and that is the term URIC, and that is unavoidable residual environmental contamination. And you know, that's the bottom line of all this is, as the industry is growing, so must the inputs to support the industry. Otherwise it won't be successful.
Otherwise organic food is going to become very expensive
because that is correct.
The competition for those who can actually produce it will make for very expensive food.
That is correct. So there's a scrambling for feedstocks, and this isn't just a compost situation. This is how organic liquid fertilizers are made, how any input into the organic system is derived. And the bigger the industry, the bigger the demand. I mean, just imagine having a small shoe store, for example, and you got 10 shoes in the stock room and 1,000 people show up. Well, there's not enough shoes to sell them, right? So you got to bring them in however you can. And the challenge I see moving forward is how can you sustainably provide organic nutrition to a industry that is growing as fast as organics. There's a lot of fish fertilizer out there. There's a lot of various inputs.
Pretty soon we're going to run out of fish,
that,
right?
Right. So what's the sustainable approach? You need to look at these waste streams, mm-hmm. and how can you scientifically process them to, one,
get rid of all the
address
stuff.
The uric, which is the unavoidable residual environmental contamination, to render it as a organic material.
Okay.
And, you know, that's the challenge. And
well, okay, let's go see what Tom has to say. Folks, phone numbers today, if you'd care to participate, 831-479-1080. Tom, what say you?
Hello, gentlemen. I just say I'm really glad the judge did what he did. I think his ruling should stand. I think if the people don't want to do it right, the large farmers, then they should stay out of it. I think it can be done right. I think it's hard. I think that's what needs to be done. It needs to be done. The hard work needs to be done, and it needs to be done. You can grow nitrogen. There could be people growing nitrogen. So that's my comment. I'm really, really firm on this. We don't need more pesticides in the environment. We need less.
Well, before you go, Tom, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
This will make food, organic food, extremely expensive, don't you think? Because as those people who want organic food, you know, go into the market and buy it, and if the industry has to comply with these very strict rules, that means that it's going to be harder and harder and harder to grow it, which I think was the aim in the first place of all the organic agriculture in the first place, is to make it more difficult and more pure. But it's going to be more expensive. Now, are you going to be willing to pay more?
Well, I'll answer your question. First of all, I've been paying more for a long time, and I'm a little bit angry about the situation because I was always thought that the American way was when there was more, the price would go down. And I don't agree with your premise that it necessarily has to be more expensive. There are organizations like Rodeo, and there are other organizations. And like I said, or it can be made organic by working with the soil, growing the nitrogen. And it doesn't necessarily then have to be more expensive. I don't believe that. I believe that that's what these people say because they don't want to do the hard work to do it right.
Break. So thank you very much for that great call. Do appreciate it. Folks, this is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host today. Today we're talking with Stan Mitchell, who is the proprietor of Pacific Coast Ag, and his son, Diego. And you, 831-479-1080. Do stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to have Stan tackle that question. It's tough, but you should be able to be tough. Right back. Okay, we are back with a couple of minutes left in the really big question. Caller says that agriculture should be able to live without the bad stuff. And yet, can we live without the bad stuff and supply all of the organic food people want at a price that people can afford? Stan Mitchell.
Yeah, you know, that's going to be a tough situation to address. You know, the bottom line here is there is so much environmental contamination, period, that I don't know ways around it. And I'm not a farmer. I work with them. I support what they do. I try to provide to them the inputs that they do need. But this is the challenge, is how is an industry going to grow, stay truly organic, keep the consumers happy, and not drive up the price. That in itself is an enormous, enormous challenge.
Okay, well, let's try Tony. Tony, welcome to the Food Chain. Go ahead.
The broadcasting person, Mr. Olson. Yeah, I just wanted to say that I don't hear the lack of trace minerals being addressed, and I'm 80 years old, and when I was born, Congress was coming up with a report that all Americans have a deficit of trace minerals because we've been farmed out. That's 80 years ago. Can't be getting any better. So my solution is everyone has their own metro farm and be very careful about what they put into their own food.
There you go. Thank you very much, Tony. Okay, let's go to Rob. Rob, welcome to the food chain.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Thank you.
All right. I'm just simply checking in to comment on the feedstock. You know, soil varies, can vary significantly, and the magnitude of the variation will differ between rural and urban, but the best potential composts are often those that are made from those leftover materials of a given specific site. So it really, I'm wondering if it falls mostly on the farmer to continually test their compost, and if they're, and especially even more importantly, if they're bringing it in, won't they have to test more?
Ooh, now that's the question of the day. Who is responsible, Stan Mitchell?
Well, ultimately, the farmers are set with a challenge by their certifier, and it's mandated on what they can and can't use. Not oftentimes. It is the way it is. The certifiers at their discretion can have the authority to do whatever tests they deem necessary to ensure that their farmer is cooperating and operating under the law. That could be on site at the farmer, you know, soil sample, crop sample.
So wait a minute. Who's responsible, though? I mean, if you're going to sue somebody for having pesticides in the organic food, who are you going to sue? Are you going to sue the farmer? Are you going to sue the certifier? Are you going to sue the federal government?
I don't know. I don't know. It's a very stringent, long process to have the certifiers do what they do to ensure.
But listen, we're out of time, but it's okay to not know, because as I understand it, nobody knows right now, and that's what the struggle is all about. This has been the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson, your host. Thanks so much to Stan Mitchell and Diego for joining us today for this very tough question. And thank you all for tuning in as well. And remember, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.